Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
You know what? These football coaches are not dumb. They all talk about going 1-0 this week. Why don't the rest of us talk about going 1-0? Like today, I want to go 1-0 on this radio show. Compartmentalize it, people. That's what I'm talking about. Jonathan Smith, Oregon State football coach, joins us every week. Like, there's stuff, there's life that you live as a football coach, and then there's life you live as a dad and a husband. Do you find that football stuff bleeds into your dad husband world like that? Like, do you tell your kids go 1-0 today?
Yeah, there's some mantra there. You know, talking about locking in today at school and just focus on one class at a time. At the same time, I'm always, well, you got a test on Friday. You're always looking forward.
Yeah.
There's no question that some of my parenting is similar to my coaching.
Do you get to drop the kids off ever at school or pick them up, or is that you're already into your work day?
On occasion, yeah, depending on, you know, the season makes it definitely tough.
Yeah.
But I get it on occasion. Sometimes, you know, get in toward the end of the week, maybe picking them up from school. That's one of the beauties of Corvallis, the convenience to be able to sneak over there, but not too often.
Does the school bell ring and do the kids come running out like you and I used to run out when we were kids? Like the minute the bell rang, we're done?
Yes, yeah. School's over, and they're anxious to hop in the car, get home, and unfortunately get on a screen or unwind that way.
Jonathan Smith with us. We're not going to talk parenting all the way through the show here, but you got Cal this week. They have been defensively pretty good throughout this season. I've seen them a couple times up close. What do you see on film?
Yeah, they have been good. I mean, there's a bunch of different ways you can analyze things, but I just took Cal, their games against Pac-12 opponents. They played four of them. You're talking about the number one defense in the Pac-12 if you just go off conference game in the points, total defense, and you know Justin's done a great job for a long time on that side of the ball, and so we know this is going to be a challenge. They know our scheme, we know their scheme. It's been a struggle scoring a bunch of points on Cal for us. Even though we've been able to win a couple games, but it's been tight, lower-scoring games.
Hard-fought games, and you know, you had a big recruiting weekend this last weekend. You had Utah, big win, great second half, really exciting game. You had a bunch of recruits there. That has to feel good, and then you go to the Bay Area. You probably got some kids down there you're recruiting as well. What has that been like for you to have, like, 40 kids watching a game while you're coaching a game?
Yeah, it's huge. The game's going on. You know, the atmosphere matters, you know, and it leaves an impression on your recruits. And our student section, again, was lights out with energy throughout and packed and creating, hopefully, an atmosphere that those recruits are taking in and starting to want to be a part of it, right, and visualizing themselves playing and scoring touchdowns for Oregon State.
Everybody knows you run the ball well, and yet you come out against a Utah team that had seemingly made some adjustments, and you ran on them again. And Kyle Whittingham, after the game, gave you guys a huge compliment. He said that's the best offense in the Pac-12, and they're the best on third down. They're the best running the football. He gave big compliment to your offensive line. What is it that your O-line is doing that, you know, the defense says, hey, we're going to stop them. We got to stop the run, and nobody seems to be able to stop you.
Yeah, you know, we definitely played pretty well offensively in that second half. You know, our O-line is. They're playing well. They're targeted right. They can make it physical. I think at times they're playing well enough to where if they're creating more than a small crease, they're creating almost, you know, a yard or two for BJ or Deshaun to run through. And that's when you create bigger plays, like BJ's long run in the game for whatever it was, 60 yards. You know, everyone's covered up besides the post safety, and he's coming out of the middle of the field, and that's a tough one-on-one tackle. But there was just so much space there to create this one-on-one tackle, making it hard. And I think that's part of the O-line playing well.
On special teams, you sometimes see a team that pops a couple of big plays. And all of a sudden they start believing, you know, like as a unit, they say, hey, we can score on any kickoff or any punt. Is your offensive line in that groove right now?
I think they're playing confident and they totally believe on what we're doing. And they're confident when we drop back to pass and we throw it. I do feel that. And, you know, this unit, and I keep on including the tight ends with that.
Yeah.
They're playing with some confidence, but I will tell you, they're aware that each week's going to be new and schematically, and you can see the different stuff. And Cal's got some good players. So the mindset, yeah, the expectation is we can have some success running the ball, but each week's new. We got to do it again on Saturday.
I wrote about this on Sunday, but I think, you know, your demeanor during games, or maybe even especially when things aren't going well, is very even. And I think that serves you and your team well. You seem to come out of adversity very even and focused. You go into halftime, maybe hadn't played your best football against Utah. You come out in the second half, and you guys were lights out. What is that adjustment? Is it an XO thing? Is it just, hey, we got to clean up mistakes? What's the adjustment you're making?
Well, there's, you know, adjustments on each phase, both sides of the ball, special teams. I think the staff, the consistency of emotion. Look, this game's, you know, played with emotion. These guys are playing with great effort, enjoying it, battling all of this and that. But there is a strategy side to this game, and you know, no panic in regards to, yeah, we got to adjust, we got to do this better defensively, we got to do this better offensively. And I did think a huge part of that game was us offensively scoring our opening drive to get us back within and get the crowd back into it. And then we got to stop, and then we get the punt blocked and totally flip the game.
When you get a punt block like that, there's an energy in the stadium that's bananas. What was that like for you on the sideline?
That was awesome. I mean, just because those guys have been believing we can change the game, hadn't gotten home this year yet on a punt block. It was big time. You know, Luke Musgrave, Raleigh, and really all four of those guys are right there around the punter. It's huge because that you talk about those things on, you can change the game on special teams, and that obviously did.
Jonathan Smith is with us. You know, were you that way as a player, that calm demeanor in the huddle? Were you known as a guy who was less up and down and more even, or is that something you've developed as a coach?
Well, I definitely wasn't real boisterous. That's just my personality type. Didn't get overly excited. Got competitive. You know, I had my moments, you know, because old school, you huddle up, right? You got 10 guys staring at you. You're about to call a play, and you want to throw a quick message in once in a while. But I've always liked the strategy, and that's just kind of my personality type, to not be the life of the party.
Yeah, but I also think, like, there's going to be a time when you raise your voice, and you probably have this season multiple times, but... And people pay attention when you do that because they know you're not always doing it.
Oh, yeah, and we've had a couple of those team meetings once in a while, or staff meetings once in a while. But, you know, everyone around you, we're working hard. I just don't feel like you got to raise your voice to create some energy. Yeah. I think it adds some emphasis once in a while, and that's what good coaches do.
What do you see from Chance Nolan right now that makes you think that he can improve and get better? You're always trying to get better, but what do you see in Chance Nolan?
Yeah, we've talked a little bit. There's a couple techniques in the pocket we got to tighten up, especially off of this last game. You know, a couple of sacks we got this last game, he was too deep in the pocket. He needs to step up. He's getting his back foot back there about 11 yards. That's tough on the left tackle. And obviously our ball security, he gives him the ball there at the end of the half. That's not a good play. You know, you're not trying to make a bad play worse. Definitely what he did there. And look, part of his game is to extend plays, and he's running with the ball and creating first downs that way. So it's a fine line, but we got to make sure when we're going out of bounds or getting tackled, we got the ball in our hand.
Sometimes a kid's trying to make a play, maybe trying a little too hard?
Yeah, you want him to be trying to make a play and be competitive. It's just that's that position, man. It's tough to play quarterback when that fine line of, like, trying to keep moving forward or trying to extend a little bit longer to something good going to happen versus, you know what, this isn't, throw it away, go down. Live with a sack. You know, sack's better than throwing an interception.
Tristan Jebbia was in uniform throwing some passes. I know a lot of people, listeners, care about the kid. And how is he doing? How close is he to being ready to play some football? And you know, you've watched him and lived with him in this period where he's rehabbing. You know, good kid.
Oh, he's been great. He really has. He's not that close to being able to kind of play and go. He's throwing the ball. He did some 7-on-7 in practice today. It still comes down to the movement, being able to protect himself. He's just not there yet to be able to get himself in the game full speed. I will give the kid a ton of credit. He's been awesome with Chance, Sam, helping out. He's been at every meeting, game planning, traveling with us, on the sideline, adjustments being made. I mean, he's been actively involved.
Are you having fun?
I am. It is fun. And it's what's fun is it's the day-to-day when you feel like you're around great people. And I think we got that going right now. In that locker room, this staff, it's fun on the day-to-day to spend a lot of time around some really good people.
It's the year starts, and I remember at media day, I said, you know, can you get to 6? And you said, we want to win them all. And I saw, like, some people may have rolled their eyes, but here you are now, and it's the goal now is bigger than 6, isn't it?
Without question. I mean, and again, I don't know, there's not a number that, oh, this is the goal. It's just trying to stack performances back-to-back. This mantra of 1-0 each week. But just for the program going in, I did feel like we felt confident that we could play really well on Saturdays and win against every opponent that was on our schedule if we play well. And then why are you going to settle on just a single number? So, yeah, we're trying to go get another one this weekend. We're going to have to go and play well, and I'm sure it's going to come down to the fourth quarter, and you got to find a way to finish.
Isn't it funny? You might as well start the game on, like, the 20. Somebody's got the ball. Somebody's got to stop somebody to win the game. That's kind of how it is for you guys. But it's been fun to watch. I just don't know, like, from a stress standpoint, if that's enjoyable for you. The competitor in you probably loves it.
Oh, yeah. It can be stressful at those moments. I'm not always a huge smile in those tight ball games, but this is what you sign up for. Like, this is that is fun. I started our team meeting Tuesday morning with our guys prepping for Cal here and just showed them the TV copy of all these games Cal's been in tight. Into the game against the Ducks. They go for 2 and don't get against TCU with 4 minutes left. I mean, our last year's game with these guys came down to us getting an interception when they're first and goal on the 10. And so just reminding them how much detail and enjoyment there is when you have success, but it's going to come down to the end.
I think it's a fun stadium to be in. It's got, the hill all around it and the campus around it, and, nobody can park outside. You just walk into this old stadium. And do you have memories as a player of playing at Berkeley?
Yeah, I remember playing there and coached there now a bunch. I like the view out the back of the press box, right?
Yeah,
on a clear day, you can go and take a great look at the bay and what do they call it? Cheap Hill. What do they call it?
Strawberry Hill or the Cheapskate Hill?
Yeah, Cheapskate. Guys watching it there. It is. I think there's a lot of cool things about a lot of the stadiums in this league.
Yeah, I think even like, Arizona, I love the sunset when you look out over the desert, or Colorado Stadium in a night game is phenomenal. And you guys in Oregon, both with phenomenal views as well. All right, you got a big game. I wish you luck this weekend. It's been fun to see you guys play. Keep it going. I mean, I think a lot of people out there, a lot of Beaver fans out there are excited to see what you guys do with this opportunity.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We're always working at it, and we're into a little routine. And so every Wednesday we're hopping on here. It's been good for me, too.
Yeah, and even, you came on in a bye week, and not everybody does that. Much respect for that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that was right. I thought I was going to get a Dodger question today, so I'm glad you didn't bring that.
I was going to ask you, are pulling for the Braves, right? Like, are we pulling Braves? We have that in
National
common?
Nationally. Yeah. I will be honest, I did not watch it.
Yeah.
But I'm pulling for them.
Fast start by the Braves, home run on the first pitch. So that's channel that on Saturday.
No doubt.
All right. Jonathan Smith, thank you.
Yep.
All right, take care. There he is, Beavers coach. Very even. I think it benefits his team. It serves his team. 2-10, 5-2, doesn't matter. You get the same Jonathan Smith. It's interesting to me, and I loved his comments about, you don't need to yell to get attention. Like, it's a different philosophy. You can tell these kids at Oregon State, especially that offensive line and the tight ends, are playing with purpose, and they believe. You see it on the run plays. They are dominating teams at the point of attack. Kyle Whittingham's comments, Kyle Whittingham doesn't throw around compliments. Okay, he's not sandbagging in the wake of a game. He might say a little sandbag a little in front of a game, but after that game, he was effusive in his praise for Oregon State's offensive line. He said that's the best offense of the conference. They're the best offense running the football. They score more points. They're better on third downs, and the offensive line is playing lights out. It's going to be fun to see what they do against Cal. Leave it here. Our Big Splash coming up next. Appreciate Jonathan Smith, Oregon State football coach, joining us every week. Mario Cristobal is on yesterday's show, University of Oregon coach. They are very different, aren't they? Very different. Shows you there's more than one way to win football games. Ducks and Beavers cruising along. We've got the Blazers in a game tonight. Are you excited about this Blazer game, Peter?
No, not particularly. I'll keep tabs on it, but I'm going to be watching my Braves in the World Series.
Got your baseball. Do you do like a picture-in-picture? Do you toggle back and forth, or how do you watch when you got two games like that?
I do sometimes, or I'll have a game on the tablet, a game on the television as well, maybe something on my phone. I might do that. I mean, we'll see. We'll see. But the baseball's number one right now.
Blazers, Grizzlies. That is tonight, 7 o'clock, Moda Center. It's on ESPN. As well, so hostages go free tonight. This brings us, of course, to our Big Splash. It's the one thing you need to know.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there. Must be
the Big Splash. Brought to you by the Exergen Twice Daily Thermometer.
Well, we'll go to the World Series. In fact, we'll go to the first swing of the World Series.
Here's one slammed into left field. How about that start to the World Series? Soler will take the trip. And he puts Atlanta up one zip with a first swing of the Fall Classic.
First swing of the Fall Classic. They're calling it Soler Power. Solar Power. I don't know. Play on words. But it was a lead. And when you're in the World Series, that is a big deal. Braves did lose Charlie Morton. Broke his leg in the World Series, continued to pitch. That was unreal, Peter. Were you tuned into that?
Yeah, man. You know, you see the comebacker and you always go, is he okay? Is he limping? He seemed totally fine. You go, oh, boy, you know, something dodged right there. And then a little while later, he just landed awkwardly and you think, well, I don't know what happened. I didn't even relate the two until the report came out.
Fractured fibula, knocked him out in the third inning. You know, and Braves go on to win 6-2. You got to be feeling pretty good. But how will the loss of Morton affect the Braves in this series?
That's huge because, I mean, you look at him, he's probably going to, in theory, go in game four and maybe even go short rest in game seven. And the thing about Charlie Morton is he is a lights out postseason pitcher. We're talking on the level of like Jack Morris, John Schmoltz, you know, Whitey Ford. Some guys just get it done when it gets cold. And when you have one of those dudes on your roster, you desperately want to be able to give him the ball. So that will hurt down the line if this series gets stretched out.
Yeah. Tucker Davidson is replacing Morton on the World Series roster. Major League Baseball allowing that. So you get a 25-year-old left-hander who had four starts this season, 2-2 in AAA. You know, he has not appeared in any Major League postseason games. Be interesting to see how Tucker Davidson's arrival affects the Braves moving forward. I thought it was a pretty good night, like, for the baseball fans in the world who can sleep well. Like, I'm talking about everybody who's not rooting for the Astros. Pretty good night for everybody out there. I feel like the Astros need to get beat in this series, and then we can all move on. Do you think after this series, if, let's just say the Braves sweep them, would that be like, hey, karma's a bitch, everybody moves on, now we move on and we can stop talking about that trash can in the Astros, or does that thing linger forever?
I think a little bit of both. Some people that are really tuned in and kind of hold a grudge, I think maybe some of them will let them go, you know, get their just desserts a little bit. But ultimately, as long as they have this same roster, as long as Altuve and Bregman and those guys are there, I think it's going to linger a little bit, John.
We're going to talk in the 1 o'clock hour about Nick Rolovich's stance on the vaccine. Apparently...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.